News Radio 560 KPQ. I'm Michael Knight. This is The Agenda. My special guest is Steve Paolini. He's speaking about Yes on 1639. If you're a little confused about all the agendas going, all the initiatives going on around the area, that's why The Agenda is broadcasting this program. The Yes on 1639 vote will cause us to do what, Steve Paolini?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Initiative 1639 is a gun violence prevention measure, and the main thrust of it is something that, while I've got the chance to go all across the state of Washington and talk to voters, most folks are, more confused that this isn't already the case. And that's to say that it should be at least as hard to purchase a semi-automatic assault rifle like an AR-15 as it already is to purchase a handgun like a revolver. And right now in the state of Washington, you've got to be 21 years old, wait up to 5 days, and go through a more advanced local law enforcement background check to purchase a revolver, but none of that is required to purchase an AR-15. Over here on 1639, we think that's absurd, and so that's the main thrust of the initiative.
And the initiative also raises the age to buy a semi-automatic weapon?
That's right. So it would raise the age to purchase a semi-automatic assault rifle from 18 to 21 to what's already required for handguns. It would require up to a 10-day waiting period, and it would enforce that local law enforcement background check that's already required for handguns as well.
How do local law enforcements do that background check? Seems like they have a lot of work to do to make that happen within the 10-day window of possibility.
Yeah, so the local law enforcement actually already run these background checks, and they do so within the first 5 days. This would, by creating the waiting period of up to 10 days, we actually give them even more time to run those background checks. That's something that 1639 does that sort of helps to lessen the burden placed on our local law enforcement. The real difference, however, is about which records are checked. And so right now we have a federal database, that's the NICS database, it's a more quick check, and it can sometimes lose some of the most up-to-date local law enforcement records. So if you had a recent domestic violence conviction, if you had a recent extreme risk protection order or domestic violence protection order, or a recent reason that you were prohibited from purchasing a firearm, there can sometimes be a delay. And so making sure that we check the most up-to-date local law enforcement record rather than just that federal record helps to make sure that those kinds of purchases don't slip through the cracks.
There's also a firearm safety training course that has to be completed within 5 years of purchase, I take it?
Yeah, so when purchasing a semi-automatic assault rifle, you would have to show proof of taking a basic training course within the last 5 years. And that's just for semi-automatic assault rifles in 1639.
Let's take a look how Yes on 1639 would help reduce gun violence that we've had so much of in the last couple of years, especially school violence.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm 22 years old, and in my very short lifetime, over 200,000 students have already been impacted by school shootings. And I think that's a number that's really unique to the United States of America, and it's unique to a country that has very unfettered access to firearms. And so a couple of the provisions in here, if you look at other states that already have them, you see pretty significant reductions. So with just the waiting periods and the local background checks, for example, we see a 17% reduction in homicides. We see a 10% reduction in suicides. In addition, 1639 has a kind of safe storage accountability requirement. And in states with those kinds of laws, we see 24% less accidental shootings with children. And so what we're really taking a look at here is with semi-automatic assault rifles, this is a category of firearm that when used in crimes results in 80% more injuries and 60% more fatalities. These are more deadly, more lethal firearms. And so regulating them and making sure that for example, with that age requirement, if you look at Parkland's really big shooting that a lot of people are focusing on, that was a 19-year-old kid that gained access to a firearm owned by his parents. Under Initiative 1639, not only would he be not able to purchase the kind of firearm that he used in that crime, but if he was able to gain access to it from his parents could actually face accountability because of that.
So whoever owns the gun is responsible for how it's used?
Well, they're responsible for storing it properly, which is to say I'm a gun owner, right, and I store firearms in my home with a trigger lock. And under Initiative 1639, I would need to do what is a reasonable expectation to keep my firearm out of the hands of a child, out of easy access to a child or another prohibited person. So that's really the standard of accountability.
As a gun owner, how would this change the way you store, study the gun safety laws, and purchase your weapons?
It wouldn't change the way I currently store my firearm. Under Initiative 1639, keeping your firearm locked with a trigger lock is sufficient accountability. In addition, you know, it wouldn't change much actually about the way that I purchase firearms either, because again, a lot of these things, or almost all of them, are already required for handguns. So there's not a huge difference really. The way I take a look at this initiative is it's really about essentially closing a loophole. We have semi-automatic handguns in which we enforce a number of regulations due to their increased lethality. But then we have a segment of semi-automatic rifles that we don't apply that to. And that is really a loophole, if anything. And so we're trying to close that and really put them into the same category. If it's semi-automatic, then it's gonna have this level of regulation.
This initiative doesn't seem that draconian, but some people are describing it as the most serious gun safety law that's ostensibly on the books in the United States. Is that true?
No, it's not at all the most serious or comprehensive in the United States. I would say it's one of the more comprehensive policies put forward in Washington State. And, you know, when combined with the laws that are already on the books, it would certainly put Washington within, you know, the top five safest from gun violence states in the country. But as, you know, California clearly, Massachusetts clearly, Connecticut clearly have more serious gun laws and laws I think that are actually designed worse. You know, with our main ethos when putting together this kind of policy was really, how do we balance rights with responsibilities? How do we design a set of laws that keep us safe but don't infringe on the average responsible gun owner? And all the stuff that's in Initiative 1639, if you are a responsible gun owner, it will not affect you one bit.
How was the initiative written and who had input?
Yeah, so every component of the initiative was actually in the legislature at one point. The main thrust here, the raising the age from 18 to 21, was a bill that was actually put forward by the Attorney General in Washington State over the last 4 years, and it was killed in committee the day of the Parkland shooting. And so this is a policy that we knew it was not, you know, rejected because of its content or because of, you know, how well it was written. It was rejected because of political reasons. It was rejected because some of our legislators have a kind of cowardice around gun violence prevention issues that they don't on other issues. And so we took that piece of the policy and we combined it as well with a policy, the safe storage component that I mentioned. That had been introduced first in the legislature in 1999. So I was 3 years old when it was first introduced. And it's a great piece of policy. That really is rooted in actually the best available data to prevent gun violence. It's probably the piece of this policy in 1639 that will prevent the most gun violence by keeping guns out of the hands of dangerous individuals. And so each of these pieces of policy were things that we had actually had decades of time working with in the legislature, really refining them to be extremely well-written, extremely concise policies. And then we wanted to say, listen, the initiative process is a way for the people to say, you know, our legislature is not in line with where we are on this issue.
Who's backing you and who's against you?
Yeah, I mean, we have thousands of supporters that have worked day and night to get this initiative on the ballot. It's a coalition of faith groups and education organizations and law enforcement. And it's a really wide-ranging and you know, broad coalition of supporters. On the other side, it's the traditional, you know, opponents of basically every gun safety and gun violence prevention measure ever put forward in the state, and that's the National Rifle Association, that's the Second Amendment Foundation, that's the Washington Arms Collectors. They have opposed literally everything that we have ever put forward in the legislature without suggesting a solution of their own ever at any point in the legislature either.
It's traditional in American politics when an initiative gets on the ballot. Sometimes it's difficult to know if you're voting yes and getting a yes, or you can be voting yes and actually getting a no. And the advertisement doesn't always make it easier for you. How do you think the advertisement and the media slant on this one has been?
Yeah, well, this is a good example of an initiative where you know exactly what you're voting for, right? Yes increases the regulations. No keeps things as they are.
Is law enforcement behind this idea?
Yeah, so we have the support. We're the first initiative that the Attorney General's office has ever endorsed. We have many county prosecutors and sheriffs. There are a few law enforcement organizations on the opposition side that have opposed us as well. So I would say it's in the benefit of fairness, I think it's probably equal.
Let's talk about a scenario that's similar to some of the school shootings we've had. An emotionally disturbed 17, 18, or 19-year-old manages to get a gun. Maybe he purchases it. Maybe he uses his parents. He has the ability to shoot up his school and cause a lot of death and destruction and sorrow. Yeah. How would this change that scenario?
Yeah, absolutely. So we can actually look at examples of mass shootings that have occurred recently. There was a shooting up in Mukilteo. The citizen sponsor of Initiative 1639 was the father of a kid that was actually shot in the back at an innocent house party in which a disgruntled, recently rejected 19-year-old boy decided to kill his girlfriend and two of her friends at a house party. And, you know, he was 19 years old. He went into a Cabela's. He purchased an AR-15. And a day later, he was able to use it to kill three people and injure others. And so what this initiative would do is it, first of all, would say, if you're, you know, in that period of time where we know that brain development is less developed, but we know that you're in a more dangerous sort of situation, you're not going to be able to purchase the most deadly firearms available to residents in the state of Washington. You're not going to be able to purchase an AR-15. In addition, you know, even if you were 21 years old, you'd have to wait up to 10 days. And that can really help to make sure in the case of suicides or in the case of somebody that's currently in a really traumatized or at-risk situation that they have to wait before they're able to purchase, again, the most deadly kinds of firearms available. In addition, you know, if you look at a lot of these mass shootings, These are individuals that are gaining access to firearms from law-abiding gun owners that have left their firearms really in a negligent and irresponsible way. You know, they've left their gun loaded and unsecured on the countertop, you know, and a kid takes it and brings it to, you know, in his backpack. And there was a case where he dropped, you know, a kid dropped the bag and it fired and injured two of his friends. You know, these are firearms that are stored not under lock and key and not even in, you know, a locked cabinet. They're left just sort of very irresponsibly out for anybody to gain access to them. And so that's at the heart of a number of mass shootings. And so the Initiative 1639 will really put the impetus back on the gun owner and say, your actions have consequences. If you're going to be negligent and irresponsible, you're going to be able to face accountability because of that.
Do you have any idea in terms of polls how the initiative is going, yay or nay?
Yeah, there was an Elway poll a couple of weeks ago that had us at 59% with 7% undecided.
And do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that's well within where we can land. You know, what we know from our own internal research is that if we get the message out to voters about what this policy is, you know, again, what we're asking voters for is let's make sure that a class of firearms that either deadlier, more lethal firearms that contribute to 80% more injuries, 60% more deaths when they're used in crimes. Let's make sure that they are at least as difficult to purchase as what is already required for handguns. If folks understand that message, they overwhelmingly support it. So if we're able to get our message out, if we're able to cut through the misinformation, of which there is a lot because our opponent is the NRA, then folks will support it and they'll do it overwhelmingly. Our challenge, of course, in the next, you know, 15 days or so here is really to make sure that we're able to do that. You know, the NRA has started placing a bunch of advertisements that are really fear-mongering and confusing to voters. And so, you know, if we're able to fight back against that, I know that we can reach what the Elway poll has us at or better.
Steve, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate your time and for putting yes on 1639 into focus. Steve Paolini, thank you so much for being on the agenda. I appreciate your time.
All right. Bye.
News Radio 560 KPQ.